My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, 3-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Happy, the ball itself has its own energy, or life force, if you will. Its natural environment is in the home, so why don't you send them home?
It's Mike Shope.
Why didn't you just go home? That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
And the Bulldog.
That Happy Gilmore, he's a real crack up, isn't he? I mean, he's a hoot. You know, what was great today, one of his fans mooned me and had Happy written on his ass. Ha on the one cheek, and then, sure enough, PPY right there in the other.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Happy learned how to putt. Uh-oh.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I would say just about anything you could want a golf fan from a major championship, you got. Maybe there could have been more contenders right there with McIlroy and DeChambeau. But still, I mean, 9 out of 10 at least.
I mean, huge, huge names in the sport. And they're dueling all the way down. And you've got, you know, Finau was around. He's a pretty big name. Cantlay's a pretty big name. But Rory and DeChambeau are two of the biggest stars in the game, and they were going head-to-head. The only shame is that they weren't in the same pairing.
Yeah, I guess, although I think I like that too. I like that they were alternating, you know, right down.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like they were never hitting at the same time. It just worked. Because apparently the golf course has something to do with that, with how close all the holes are, how they can see each other.
Yeah, in fact, at one point, pretty late, I don't remember, maybe it was 13 green and 14 tee, maybe Brian will remember, they even said on the TV at one point how Rory was about to tee off, but he waited because there was a reaction to a Bryson DeChambeau approach shot, and so he was all lined up, and then so he stepped away because it was right behind his back was where this reaction was taking place, so yeah.
Brian Koziol with us. Brian, what wasn't to love and appreciate from this tournament?
Oh, my goodness, so much. I mean, you were just saying, what else could you ask for? I mean, Jeremy and Joe and I, when we were talking this morning, we were trying to say, like, when was the final, you know, the final stretch of a major this good? And I said, I think you got to go back to 2019, Tiger at Augusta. Like, I really, the last handful of years of majors, we are looking at, there's been no playoffs. The Shoffley DeChambeau one, obviously, that we just had with the PGA was very close, a one stroke difference. But it feels like, just kind of referencing back to these last 3-4 years worth of majors, we didn't have the good drama like we had here. Last year's U.S. Open was pretty good. Fowler, McIlroy, and Clark were kind of all in there. But in the end, we didn't get it where it came down to the last shot like we did here. And the whole time, you couldn't really predict what was going to happen. If anything, I would have predicted that McIlroy was going to hold on to win. Obviously, those two putts, you know, three bogeys on those last four holes here did him in tremendously. But you probably have, to me, I would say the two most, even Scheffler, who is the world's best player, I just think there's so much entertainment value with what you get with McIlroy and with DeChambeau that I might say, in terms of must-see TV with golf, like, they might be one and two for me, and I don't even know which one is one amongst the two of them.
I'll tell you, I was invested in DeChambeau. Of course, we all were because of the bet the three of us have together, but I had a separate thing on DeChambeau. So I was really into him, of course, on Saturday and Sunday. Yesterday, Brian, I must have said a half a dozen times to no one in particular, just whoever was within earshot, like, man, he's just so fortunate to still be in this thing, because he was kind of all over the place almost all day, right to the end even.
He only hit 5 out of 14 fairways. So, I mean, that's 9 times he was in that wire grass or that native area. And each time, I mean, you know, after they hit, after he goes in there, you're thinking, well, it's, you know, it's almost Plinko. Like, is it going to end up in the wire grass, underneath it, on top, on the side? And then even in the times where it looks like, ooh, is his lie good? Then he'd get up there, his stance maybe wasn't good. So I thought that was super entertaining. I mean, you have to credit, for as much as we can debate how much did Rory choke it away at the end, for Bryson to be just, I think, very off with his tee game, I was so impressed with how he would just get himself out of trouble every time there, that he would put himself back in position to make a par, whether it was a great second shot, whether it was a great recovery shot around the green, or it was even maybe a putt here and there. Like, I'm super impressed. Normally at the U.S. Open, you miss 9 fairways, it's going to come back to bite you. And I know he definitely got a little help with a couple of the McIlroy slip-ups, but, man, I was so impressed with how he was able to, I'll use the overuse phrase, grind out pars.
Like, yeah.
He was all over with that. He was so good.
Yeah, there was, forgive me, I don't remember which hole, but he spent a long time in that stuff at one point because there was, a tree root that was on the scene, too, that he could have really hurt himself. Like, but he ended up, he avoided it on the swing. But, yeah, I mean, you just never know what you're going to get in that stuff, as it is well documented.
Was it 18 where the tree branches was hanging over the top of him?
Right.
There was a root near him there as
that's,
well.
That's the way it was on 18. Okay, yeah, it was that late. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. It took him a long time to figure out what he was going to do there.
Yeah, and I think, too, I mean, obviously he ends up hitting it somewhat, you know, horizontally over into the other bunker, because he wasn't that far from the green. I mean, I know he advanced it a little, but he ends up having it to go into that bunker and then set up that incredible up and down from there. And I, you know, just deferring to the guys on the broadcast and just some other writers that cover the tour regularly saying, like, that's a shot that normally these guys you'd think maybe wouldn't practice as often as others, because most of the time, all right, when are you in the bunker? Well, off of a tee shot, well, it's a fairway bunker shot where you've got, you know, 100 plus yards in, mm-hmm. or greenside where you're missing it. Like, you rarely see a pro miss hit a shot into a green where you still would have 50 to 60 yards left.
Right.
So that's a shot they probably don't hit that often. And, you know, that shot, obviously, we've seen it. Even the Johnson Wagner,
yes.
on Golf Channel,
right.
That whole sequence where Bryson came out there and then he did it again. Like, that was great TV to see that. It was really impressive that what he was able to do there with the pressure. I know some people say it would have been even better if you knew he had to get up and down, but whatever. I mean, he did it. He executed it, and that was really phenomenal.
Brian, at least on the radio broadcast that I was exposed to, I was in my car most of the weekend, so listening to the coverage on the radio, a lot was said many times about how DeChambeau has successfully remade his image. Can you explain that? Like, to anybody who might not really know enough about much about him, or just what has happened, what was the case before and what is the case now? And are you buying this narrative that DeChambeau has done that, successfully rebuilt his image?
I think he has. And I'll go back even before this tournament. The PGA Championship, he's walking from one hole to the next, tosses a ball to a kid, and just as the kid's about to catch the ball, a grown man adult grabs the ball in front of him and then kind of runs back. And DeChambeau, instead of walking to the next tee because he's got a tee off, chases and yells to get this guy back, eventually makes sure that the kid gets the ball that he wanted to toss to. I know that was kind of a viral video during the PGA Championship that really, I think, won over a lot of fans. I know in his life he's had personal tragedy since his last kind of time that we've regularly seen him on the PGA Tour with his father passing away. I don't know if that in some sense, maybe reassess kind of how he wants to present or handle life for himself. But I would say from writers and people that speak with him regularly, he has always come off as maybe a little bit standoffish, maybe as middle as the, hey, I'm the smartest guy in the room kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that has done a total 180. I mean, he was out there after 9 p.m. in the dark, taking selfies, signing autographs. He literally offered anybody that wanted to touch the trophy an opportunity to do so. And from all reports, it looks as though if you were willing to stand there for an hour, you might have gotten your hands on the trophy or a picture or an autograph. So I think, you know, him referring to Payne Stewart, him referring to his dad, all that sort of stuff, him even sticking around at the PGA when he lost to Xander. I know that's been some comparisons today of like, look, Bryson ended up losing in excruciating fashion. He went right to Shoffley afterwards, congratulated him, where obviously Rory did not, which has drawn a little criticism from him of kind of how he had the quick exit after obviously having that painful loss.
You know, I even noticed during play yesterday, Brian, I think it might have been when the lead got to two for Rory. Whatever DeChambeau misplayed to cause him to drop behind like that, leaving that green, and he was maybe the most negative emotionally he was all day, was on the green at this hole. As he was walking off, the smile came back out, and there was the as many people as he could, you know, reasonably get his hands on. He's walking by, just giving everybody the fist bumps and the high fives. So like, to me, that's a sign that it's not just for show. Like he had a moment where he was really hot and upset. Stakes are enormous, of course, and he just got right back into I'm a man of the people mode again. And I was pretty impressed by
that. You're like that.
Sure I am.
Yes. On the golf course.
Yes, yes.
Bulldogs like that.
Always giving.
Yes.
I'm always giving.
I've seen Bulldog down at Delaware Park where he is high-fiving as he's walking down the fairway as all the runners come by. So I
and he does it in a jog like Hale Irwin in 90 at Medina. He runs along the rope line. Just
with the red pants even. I know. Right?
Yes.
Well,
no, I think you're right on that. He even on Saturday, there was a moment that shorter, possibly drivable par 4 where he had his driver in his hand and then put it back and grabbed the iron. And the crowd, of course, because they wanted him to go for it, kind of gave him the boo. And he even's like, I'm sorry. He goes, I'm, you know, like, kind of, he knows the fans wanted him to pull out the driver and rip at it. And the fact that he's just acknowledging fans during the course of, you know, obviously the highest level competition in the world, like, I think that shows that he isn't taking himself too seriously. So I do want to believe that maybe he has kind of taken a different, more mature approach, and maybe just valuing the sense that, look, like, you are a valuable commodity to growing the game of golf and what a big impact that you can have. So maybe he's just over these last few years realized that hey, if I do acknowledge the crowd, hey, if I do maybe smile at the camera, all these sort of things, you know, and McIlroy, I think, is excellent at that. I mean, they both stopped for the boy in the wheelchair at that one point where they both passed by. Mm-hmm. Bryson even signed the autograph. So I don't want to make this all negative that Rory didn't do anything there. I know he left early. I know we might talk about that. But for Bryson, I think his image, his understanding that the power that he might have to make the experience great for everybody, like I think he's realized what he can do in a positive way, because I think that's all, you know, we want is, why do we watch sports? Well, we want to feel it. We want to see it. What is it like to be professional, to be the best in the world? And for Bryson to give you a little piece of like that you're involved in that, I think is why we watch sports.
Golf is maybe my favorite sport for analyzing careers and, you know, legacies that can be trite, but it's almost like football, but they're all quarterbacks. And here's McIlroy with 4, but none since 2014. And that's now, and it's been this way. And it's really a compliment because you're sort of somebody that's expected to win majors. And I mean, again, McIlroy had won 4 by the age of 25, but none since. And now this one, Brian, and this one, even though he was second by a shot last year, this one seems more egregious and more likely to be what some people will use to define McIlroy. Like, I don't know that anybody thought of him so much as a choker, but that word, it's like the worst word in sports, and that's on him today, not because he didn't do media, but because of these putts that he missed in the late going.
I heard you talking to start the show in your first hour about, you know, Mickelson's moment where, or maybe it was the Scott Van Pelt clip that you played, where Mickelson's moment in the U.S. Open for a while there was, oh my God, what is he doing? He's hitting driver on the last hole when he doesn't have to and he could be winning here, and he hits the 10th. But there was almost this, like, lovable, well, he went for it sort of attitude, or, well, he hit, he was playing aggressive. McIlroy's faux pas now in the U.S. Open is going to be, he choked on a two-and-a-half footer. Like, there's nothing manly or aggressive or enticing about, oh, well, he took out the driver. Like, no, he choked on a putt that he has to make. So, like, there's this, even though they both lost in their own big moment there, I think the difference is that almost Mickelson, there's some enduring piece to it of, like, well, he went at it with the driver and it failed. And, you know, we can laugh about where Rory's putts are just, you know, I mean, those are almost impossible to miss. I mean, what was it? It was four. What was even the number? Like 276 of 496. I don't even know what it was of how many in a row he had hit up to that point. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to be known for this. I think, until he wins a major.
Until he wins again.
And all that said, like I totally understand. I guess anyone can understand it. Just it's a matter of whether or not you want to be critical of him for leaving like he did. I'm generally very forgiving, at least of him, and I guess that's because I've liked him all this time. I don't know how. Where are you at on that, Brian? Like, do you feel like he let everyone down by not being there to answer for what happened on 16 and 18?
I think I'm okay. Like, I can live with it. I think, would I, as a person that maybe, you know, coaches high school sports, would I at least like, I know we don't do interviews in high school sports, but I would always tell, you know, my teams, like, hey, you got to at least acknowledge the winner, congratulate them, that sort of thing. Now, could he have, without a camera, at some point, given Bryson a congratulations, and maybe we don't know about it, I guess. But I feel like if he wanted to bail on the media, I could see that. There's really no positive questions coming your way at that point, or, you know, at least that he would be envisioning at that point. So I could see him wanting to bail. He, at this moment, is supposed to play in the Travelers Championship, which is this week.
Well,
he's not.
He issued a statement a little while ago that said he's going to take some time, and he'll be back at the Scottish Open, where he's defending champion, and then the Open at Royal Troon.
Okay, well, thank you for updating me on that, because I know earlier in the day he was on the field list, so that's good. So we won't hear from him for a little while, but I understand it. I mean, I know that, you know, if you're not covering the tour as your career job, then you probably can see it. I'm sure there are beat reporters that are upset about it.
Right.
And I guess when I was hearing you guys talking about it earlier today, like, is he going to be known for that? How long do we equate the Stefon Diggs not talking to the media after the Cincinnati game? I don't know if it's a fair comparison or not, but I always feel like, when was the real end of Diggs not working here in Buffalo? And I could point to that moment, the Cincinnati game, with him and Allen just jawing on the sidelines, him getting pissed at Allen, and then he walking immediately out of the locker room after that game, not meeting with the media. Like, I don't know if that's a...
It definitely changed from there, I think. Like, our perception of the whole relationship, the whole thing changed, I think, after that.
Yeah. And, you know, McIlroy's on his own, which is why, Mike, I think it is fair to be able to analyze careers, because it's like, well, how good is his quarterback? Well, how good was his team? How all the sort of, like, Dan Marino's career, he didn't win a Super Bowl. Jim Kelly's career, he didn't win a Super Bowl, but he's on a team. Like, these guys are individuals. So I think it's to be able to analyze career, what are they known for? What are their legacy? It might be a little easier to do in golf than maybe in something that has a team associated to it.
When I referenced this, I think, last week, actually, sort of random, but a long time ago, I remember reading John Feinstein's golf books, and one was called The Majors. And maybe the first chapter of that book was kind of anybody can win one, but the real, if you win two majors, like that, then you're legit. Anybody who can win multiple major championships, sort of, it's a different level of distinction. He was writing how the players would have said that. This is 30 years ago, sorry, but it might still have some truth to it. And that's what DeChambeau accomplished here with this win, both U.S. Opens. Scheffler, who has dominated like he has two, both Masters. And that's it for him. And we've got the Open Championship coming up in about a month, and that'll be whose?
Me, I think I pick. Or is it you?
No, it's back to me.
Oh, it's you. Yeah, you went first. That's right. That's
Brian
right.
So won on the Masters with yeah. Scheffler. And
it's back to Brian, and then I'll lead off next year. Yeah.
And look, Mike, just so I want to obviously honorably pay up on my end, Bryson was a normal yep. one-to-one payment, right? He wasn't in the top three, correct?
Correct. He was either the fourth or the sixth favorite, just outside the top three with Hovland and Morikawa.
Mike was looking at the board. Wasn't here, I changed it to update it for next year already. So on the board in the room here, Brian, it says I've got the Masters and then Mike's got the PGA.
I've already started doing research for next year's PGA. It's at Glen Oak. I'm ready.
I've driven to Oakmont to do my review for the U.S. Open.
Yes.
I was there last night studying the green layout. Yeah.
A record 10th hosting of the U.S. Open next year, Oakmont. I heard the same ads all weekend.
Yeah, I was looking at the future sites for the U.S. Open. It seems as though the trend of trying these newer build courses like Chambers Bay, Erin Hills, or to maybe some of these, they are going hardcore at the traditional yep. venues.
And they're set 20 some years out. They said yeah. Pinehurst has 2047 or something.
Yeah, Pinehurst has got it's coming every 5 or 6 years for Pinehurst. Oakmont's got the same. Pebble, it is probably Marion, I think, has got one.
Yep,
I'm
looking at it right now, and because last year at some point I saw this on Twitter and I copied and pasted it into my notes. And yeah, Oakmont, Shinnecock, Pebble, Winged Foot, Pinehurst again in 29, Marion, Pebble again, Oakmont again, Oakland Hills, Pinehurst again. I'm up to 2035.
It's all blue bloods,
but it's all the King yeah. courses.
Yeah. No respect for River Oaks, Brian. It's been
or
fun.
Delaware Park.
Or Delaware Park. It's been fun talking golf with you. It always is. We'll do more of it when the Open Championship comes around.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Almost said British Open, but
can't do that.
I don't
want to
get canceled.
Right. Can't. Don't.
You get canceled for that?
Be careful.
British Open. Who's old? Has the show ever sounded older than when the guys referred to it as the British Open? I think not. We had the U.S. Chopin back when I was in Rochester.
The U.S. Chopin?
We had the U.S. Chopin. Yeah, that.
Was there a Chopin championship?
There was a Chopin championship, and there was there was another one we did, some other corny wordplay thing. But yes, we did it all back then. We did it all. We accomplished it all. And we have said it all. Except for our conversation with Tony Ferrari on the NHL draft. The Sabres pick 11th. What if they do the unthinkable and keep the pick? What will happen? Find out from Tony and us, Mike Chopin, the Bulldog, right after this here on WGR.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.